That party was, that was kind of magical too. You know, it was, in the sense where it was like,
I get it. It's because I wasn't there. Cool.
It
guys.
Was because Matt wasn't there, you know, and I remember saying to Ash, I was like, thank God, you know, yeah. Like, it's just the two of us finally.
So much better when he's not around.
Yeah.
I was hoping you'd put a ring on it, but you didn't.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 167, and sometimes I feel like I say Rated NA, and I don't actually say Rated NA. You guys ever hear that? Rated NA?
I don't even know what I hear anymore.
All right, well, I'm Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
Yay, we did that really quickly.
Yeah.
Yep. Getting used to that weird
shit.
It's
a thing now.
It's a thing now. We're going to say our names so that you guys can say, that's Scott, Matt, and Ash.
Say my name.
Here we go.
Ash in real life actually sounds a lot more like Beyonce than he does on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I do.
Yeah.
And he keeps telling Scott and I to put a ring on it. I don't know why.
Weird.
You guys just won't follow through. It's been so many years now, coming up on 4 years, and I'm just waiting. Waiting for the moment.
Yeah.
I think it's even legal here in Florida, is it? I don't know.
It is now, yeah.
There we go.
Throw your hands up at me.
Although, I don't know if polygamy technically is, so that would be challenging. You guys have to fight to the death.
We just marry each other.
I know, leave me behind.
Let's do the rundown.
Okay, so this is our pre-PAX posturing episode, which I think we've named one that before, so we'll have to think of a new name for this podcast.
Yeah.
But that's what we're doing this week. We're going to talk about our plans for PAX. We will have some news that occurred this week. Including the Simpsons marathon that's going on. So I want to hear about that. I'm interested in what's going on with that. And then we'll talk about Snowpiercer. And then we're doing a Nequado generic classic this week, which is, what is your greatest con memory?
It is. It was.
Yeah, it is a classic. And I think it's, I mean, although the question has been asked before, you still had maybe an entire year to make new memories. So
exactly.
It doesn't mean the answer
is
had
after his new greatest con memory.
I think we've been doing this for like 140 episodes at this point, and there's going to be some fucking repeats.
Well, I mean, we can have, you know, now that we're sort of on a yearly schedule, we can have things that repeat.
That's true.
They don't have to be like, oh, reruns. They're
What's
like
your favorite Thanksgiving treat?
They're the new classics, you know?
Yeah,
new
true.
Classics.
Hey, guys. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 150,000 titles to choose from in every genre. I'm not going to name them all because I name them every week, and you guys know what genres are, and they're all really good. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. Get a free audiobook download if you go to www.audibletrial.com/ratedNA. That is the name of our podcast, and the reason that is there is because you help us out when you go there and sign up for Audible. So you get a free book, and you help out the podcast, and we keep the proverbial lights on,
yes,
so to speak.
Absolutely. I think that for my next audiobook pick, I'm going to follow your lead, and I'm going to start doing the trilogy that you tell us to read all the time.
The Expanse.
I guess it's four books now, right?
It's four books now, yeah, The Expanse. Yeah. So good.
So that's going to be next on my list for sure.
So good.
Yes.
I'd be interested to see how the reader does it, because it's like multi-voiced, so...
Yep.
First book is two voices. Second book is like four, and it'd be interesting to hear.
What's the first book called? It's called
Leviathan Wake.
Leviathan
Wakes.
Yes, Leviathan Wakes. I'm reading a different book series right now, so I get the two titles confused in my head. I don't want to misspeak.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Clawglip, I think, Chris, right?
Yeah, Chris Jenkins.
Yes. Tweeted at me that Sci-Fi's already put up the teaser page on their website.
Oh, wow.
For, The Expanse, yeah. And the series is just going to be called The Expanse. And
when does that drop, as the kids say?
We were talking about that. I don't think they've announced the date yet. I would imagine at the earliest it's going to be 2015. So,
right.
I mean, they just bought it earlier this year. And right? Or maybe late last year, and then they've been in writing, essentially, in pre-production, so I don't even know if they're shooting anything or have cast anything yet.
Do you think they'll use that same, you know, common cast of characters that show up in all sci-fi television programs?
Melissa and I were talking about that, because we were, like, watching Supernatural or something, and, like, somebody showed up, and it was, like, you know, the guys who were in Eureka are, like, in every sci-fi show ever created.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
And it's kind of amazing. I hope they do, honestly, because a lot of those cast members are really great. I'd love it.
We noticed that, you know, now that we're watching, my wife and I are watching Battlestar Galactica, where she's watching it for the first time, and we're seeing people that had small parts in that show that then had larger roles in other shows. So, like, Joe from Eureka, she was in, you know, around the time of the New Caprica episodes. And then the guy Henry who...
Henry's in everything.
Henry from Sanctuary. Yeah, he's, like, the staple sci-fi actor, you know?
Yeah.
Guys, Baltar was in Eureka.
Obviously. Baltar, oh, man.
Yeah, right? Good old chap. Yeah. Anyways, Ash... What is up, my friend?
Well, this week has been incredibly dull, but I did get a chance. My wife went out with work friends, so I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play a whole lot of Titanfall. So that's what I did. And I'm still really enjoying it. I'm going to be kind of bummed. Well, not really. I'm going to be bummed when other games come out, because I know I'll probably stop playing, because all I'm doing at this point is getting different generations and basically, you know, rinsing and repeating.
Everyone's going to Destiny.
Yeah, I've learned a lot about the game just through the regeneration process that I probably would have not learned before. So I'm almost through Gen 5 now. And I know we have some listeners that are like Gen 8 and Gen 9, but I'm almost through Gen 5. And Gen 5 is a bitch because there's this challenge called the Gooser. And do you guys know what the Gooser challenge is?
I don't. I'm afraid to ask.
Do you guys know the film Top Gun?
Well, yeah. Oh, do you have to eject?
So there's a scene, spoiler alert, in Top Gun where Maverick's wingman, Goose, ejects, and he dies during ejecting. And so the Gooser challenge, in order to regen, you have to kill a bunch of people while they're ejecting. It's the hardest fucking thing in the world, but it's also really fun. So I think the challenges they put into the regeneration process really make the game replayable. So for instance... like for Gen 5 now, you have to use certain weapons. Like I have to use the ARC rifle, and I have to use the R101C machine gun in order to rank up. So basically it sets you – I mean you can use whatever you want, but if you want to regen, you have to meet certain requirements with certain weaponry. So it forces you to play a different way, and I'm learning that I'm getting a lot better just through experimentation. And so I'm really, really enjoying it. And, you know, Titanfall is still a lot of fun. Like, as I'm playing Titanfall, I just keep thinking, like, oh, my God, Titanfall 2 is going to be so good. Because they've already added so much to the game, and I can't even fathom, like, what they're going to do with the next one. So I also think this – it may be over by the time this goes to air. But right now, there's actually Titanfall for free on PC for a couple days with Origin. So they're actually giving it away with a timed exclusive. So keep your eyes peeled for that. I don't know if they'll be doing that again. Other than that, work's been long this week. And then I've been doing a lot of PAX stuff, getting ready for the pre-PAX shenanigan party and setting up appointments and getting ready to see people and go on adventures in Seattle. So I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Matt, what about you? What are you doing?
Well, after the shenanigans that I talked about last week, EA wrote me a quick email to let me know they deleted my account for me.
Oh, that's nice.
And so I, sure enough, went online, hooked up my account to my Gmail account. Everything worked perfectly, signed in on the Xbox, and boom, it was all working. So I downloaded all four games, actually, just to play with them. I downloaded Madden 25, FIFA 14, I think. And
I don't even remember what else was on the list.
Peggle 2 and...
what, EA Access?
Yeah, Peggle 2 and...
Peggle, Battlefield, and Madden.
Battlefield, yeah. So I have Battlefield now if you guys want to play it.
Cool. Yeah, whatever. Sweet, man.
Yeah. But yeah, so I fired up some Madden and I fired up some FIFA. Madden was exactly what I expected and I enjoyed it. It's a bummer I don't get to look at the new XFL uniforms that the Bucks have.
Yeah, for our listeners, Matt and I are both from the Tampa Bay area, so we are hometown Buccaneers fans. And if you've seen those new uniforms, it looks like something out of I don't know.
It's like a digital clock on a fake T-shirt.
Yeah,
what it looks like.
It's like a company decided to make a football game but didn't have the licenses for the official yes. NFL teams.
That's incredible.
I feel like Ash would like them because they kind of feel like they're out of like the Mutant Football League or something.
I would like that.
Like we could easily be those could be the jersey for the Caprica Buccaneers. You know?
Oh,
what I mean? Like,
I'm totally in then. Yeah, this will become my new favorite team.
They're so terrible, but so I played some Madden. I am still really crappy at it, but hopefully through. The thing I was thinking about is that I have to like to play Madden correctly now. You have to go through like weeks of training to be able to like officially play the game in any capacity of worth, you know. Mm-hmm. So like, there's the part of me that's just like I could just go outside and like train to be a football player in this amount of time. But instead, I'm going to sit on my couch and just train here.
This year, they added drills in the tutorials section just to do pre-snap audibles, because it's so complex.
There is so much shit. Like even when they're doing things like you're running back, or you're gonna, it's the run option, and you're gonna, you know, if the guy chips at the running back, you need to run as the quarterback. And if he doesn't, like, I'm so terrible at it. I can't even, I'm like, handoff. Oh. And they're like, nope, wrong. And I'm like,
there's a triple option drill. It's impossible.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyways. So I was doing that. But it was fun. I had a good time. And, you know, it is kind of cool. It looks like they do roster updates only through the end of last year. Is that how they're pulling it off?
I would assume so. Yeah. Because now the new game's coming out. So.
Yeah. I still believe that, like, maybe this is them opening the gateway of like in a year releasing an all digital Madden that you can just buy once and then buy yearly like
it's
additions
like League of Legends
to.
Or just like there will never be a new Madden, we'll just keep patching the existing
I feel like you could buy a $60 Madden and then just pay like $30 a year and get like all of the updates for uniforms and roster and stuff. Mm-hmm. But whatever, it was fun. And then I fired up FIFA. I'm equally, if not worse, at FIFA than I am at Madden. Also, FIFA throws you directly into a game. Did you
really? No, I haven't started yet.
All I did was hit, unless I click something without seeing it, I literally was like, oh, I'll play FIFA. And I hit start on FIFA and it loaded up. And there's all these like cool EA sports graphic screens. And I'm like, oh, neat, neat. And then it's like, all right, you're playing. And I was like, I'm playing. Like, started trying to run and just passing the ball like over and over again. I got like two offsides calls and then I eventually turned it off. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. You just threw me directly in a game. But I haven't fired up Battlefield or Peggle yet. I figured Battlefield, I'll wait for you guys. And Peggle 2, I'm waiting to get my wife addicted to. So.
Oh, yeah, it's so good.
And then another thing, I did two kind of unique things this week that are not our traditional types of nerdy, but are other kinds of nerdy. Melissa and I went walking around Greenpoint where we live yesterday and went into a few record shops and I went like crate digging like I used to do back in the day.
Oh, cool, man.
And didn't actually end up purchasing anything, but there's a lot of really good record shops up here in our part of Brooklyn. And it was really fun. I really love music. That's like kind of where my nerdiness probably started way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. I don't know. It's probably a tie for like Vampire the Masquerade.
Yeah.
And being into music. Like The Cure. No. Anyways.
Joy Division.
Yeah.
That was Adam, yeah.
Yeah. But it was really fun just digging through. Like, even, like, I really love looking at records even when I have no idea what they are and just looking at cover work, like artwork and. Like, I don't know, sometimes I buy, like, one of my favorite bands from middle school and high school is this band called Sebado, and the first record I bought from them was called Bake Sale, and I bought it completely off of the album cover, which was like a baby picking something out of the toilet, which sounds weird, but it was really awesome. So it was fun doing that, and then I have a question for you guys related to the third thing I did, which is it's Ash and I's sister-in-law's birthday this week, and I went karaokeing last night. And I want to know, what are your guys' go-to karaoke songs?
Oh,
you
want to
know what's crazy, man? We talked about this within the first like 20 episodes of the show, but that was 4 years ago, so I don't expect anyone to have any recollection.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's yours?
Mine is Mandy by Barry Manilow.
Really?
That's the one I do every time.
Really?
That's incredible.
Yeah, I do Mandy. Partially because that's it, and Angel, that's what Angel would sing. So I always did Mandy. Yeah, that was mine.
I have a couple that I've always wanted to try, but I've never actually performed live yet.
Uh-huh.
because mostly because I've never seen these songs on a, like, in the books, you know. It'd have to be one of those digital systems where you can do whatever you want,
right?
But I want to do Ride Like the Wind by Christopher Cross and Michael McDonald.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. I want to do Humpin' Around by Bobby Brown.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And I really want to find somebody that will do Positive K's I Got a Man with me.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Because I feel like that would be a cool, like, duet kind of thing to do on stage.
What's your man got to do with me?
I told you. I'm not trying to hit at, see? So I've got those on the burner. They're ready to go, just about.
Mine that I do every time there's karaoke is "Any Way You Want It" by Journey, and
yeah,
that's my hit. But
that is not easy to do.
Oh, I love it. It's like I have a really high singing register, anyways. Yeah. Mine's like higher than normal, so
yeah. But you can actually sing. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's your
like me going through Mandy is like watching a cat get electrocuted.
You can sing. I've heard you sing.
Yeah,
you're fine at singing. Scott, you can sing too. I don't want to leave you out.
I used to do Creed for fun.
When you did, and it was so amazing. You used to do Creed really all the funny. Time.
It was more of like a performance piece than it was karaoke. Seen,
yeah, Creed and STP just on Rock Band was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I would do Rock and Roll. That's
about a baby. Yeah, it's like a fat person choking on gravy.
Don't you talk badly about Scott Whelan ever.
They did they closed the night with Arms Wide Open.
Oh man.
And yeah, it started as like kind of a joke. This one guy was doing it, and then like one of Jenna's other friends who had just shown up, literally just walked in like maybe 10 minutes before that. Mm-hmm. Just grabs the mic and absolutely slays with Arms Wide Open. It was like amazing. He did awesome. Perfect Scott Stapp, and it was hilarious and awesome. What else we did? I did Say It Ain't So, because it's like my go-to song. And then Melissa and I did Seether from Veruca Salt.
Oh man, that's so good.
There was a ton of 90s, because it's like that's hip to the kids right now. Is
you do
high school listening to?
Anybody do any Fuel? You know,
no Fuel.
Far away from me,
I can't think about that song without thinking about You and I in high school band that
Dude,
I won't name.
They are coming. They're coming to Epcot Food and Wine Festival. I am so excited.
Oh, really?
Fuel.
When is that? It's October.
Around that time.
Wow.
All right. Know, right? Come on.
So I thought that would be a fun little question because we did karaoke and it was a good time last night. But Scott, what have you been up to?
Dragon Age.
I like it because that's all the show notes say, and you could leave it right there and we'd all be like, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it is an extremely long game.
Yeah,
it is, especially with that DLC.
yeah for real. But I like, you know, like I said before, PC man, that's it's much easier to manage the whole game playing on mm-hmm. PC. But let me tell you guys why I didn't watch Snowpiercer, and that's because I couldn't convince my wife to watch it. And instead I ended up watching half of Great Gatsby, which is really good.
Ah.
So
I will say this. Melissa watched the whole thing with me and I was kind of blown away.
Well,
as did my wife.
Yeah.
After so much Battlestar Galactica, I can understand. I was willing to compromise, sure. You know, for the Great Gatsby.
Sure.
Absolutely.
But Gatsby is good. I'm halfway through that. That's a good film. I could talk about the first half of that during our Snowpiercer review.
It would be amazing if you just, without saying any of that, just reviewed Great Gatsby while we reviewed Snowpiercer.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, and Leonardo DiCaprio is really good, and the blonde woman, she's great. Yeah,
the blonde woman.
Daisy. Who? She's someone really famous. I can't remember her name. I'm really
Isn't
bad.
It Michelle Williams? Isn't that who did it?
Got me.
Carrie Mulligan.
Carrie Mulligan.
Yes. Yeah, there you go.
It's close.
She was like the it girl at the time of that film came out. But sadly, I really haven't done anything else. I've been mentally preparing for PAX, you know, kind of thinking about like, what am I going to take? Like I went through like this bag of lanyards that I had and I was like, well, I'd like to make sure I get some lanyards that are really comfortable to wear and like have the right kind of clips on the end so I can put my name badges and my business cards in there.
Yeah, that's how you got to prep.
It's not super exciting. Like, I do, like, you know, in my free time, I do Xbox Fitness too, but I don't know that there's a lot to say about that.
That's good.
I debated talking about the trials and tribulations of Ash and I trying to get the name badges too.
Oh boy!
Oh my god, that was hilarious.
Quite a tale.
It was like 75 messages.
That's like me wandering up and down the street. I was like literally wandering up and down my road looking for a house that didn't exist.
I was like,
and I was
going
to go steal it too.
I was angrily using UPS.com yesterday on my phone trying to get it to fucking work at any point in time. It was so obnoxious. I was so over it. And then I go into the post office site, which seems like it's going to work better. And then I put in your address, and it's like, that's not an address. And I'm like, what? You took the fake address as an address.
That's brutal. But now I just want to do karaoke. That's kind of where we're ending our...
You guys should do it at PAX. Go do karaoke.
Maybe somebody, one of our Seattleites can help us find a karaoke place while we're out there.
Just like on Friday or Saturday night, just like lead your own crew, like the Pied Piper, lead a crew of nerds to karaoke somewhere.
Impromptu karaoke session?
Yeah, do it.
I like it. Okay.
You guys want to do the news?
I was hoping somebody would just jump in and be like, you know what else is...
You know what they're going to talk about a lot at PAX?
What's that?
News. Dragon Age.
There you go. See, that's a good one.
You know, since we're only about 2 months away, is that right? 2 months away from Dragon Age? Mm-hmm. Yeah, about two months. We'll probably do these regular Dragon Age updates pretty frequently, just because there's going to be new news all the time. There's rumblings that there's going to be a lot of news, actually, at PAX, although they have not released any information at what they're doing at PAX yet, which is strange.
Schedule,
because it's only like 4 days away at this point. So who knows what we're going to get. But the big news that came out this week on the Dragon Age front is that Inquisition is not going to allow players to romance Varric, which was like a huge request of the players. Everybody wants to romance Varric because he's, you know, the most charismatic sidekick. And I guess my question for Scott is, do you think that is a big deal? Does that matter to you, or are you fine with him just kind of remaining as your bro?
I think it's completely fine because, while I understand that the hallmark of BioWare games is shaping your own kind of, you know, story, you are still playing within the world that has been created for you. So I think that if a character is or is not romanceable or is only romanceable by a certain gender or whatever, there's probably some kind of reason for that helps to establish that character as a person, and maybe also has some kind of impact on the story, like on the sort of the meta narrative that is happening in the game. So I don't think it's a big deal. And I mean, if you want to look at it from a story perspective, that's like saying, like, why can't I romance Chewbacca? He's like the perfect buddy, you know? It's like some people just need to be like in your corner all the time. And
absolutely.
Not,
and, you know. And along with what you just said about it being part of this kind of overall narrative, like if you look at Varric's backstory, he names his crossbow Bianca after his long lost love, Bianca, who supposedly died or disappeared.
So there you
and
go.
Maybe so
he's not ready.
You know, no, he's not ready. He's, you know, he's still suffering from some major loss. And, you know, I think it's completely fine for particular characters to not be romance options. I don't know. Like, I'm one of those people that I enjoy the overall narrative of all the BioWare games much more than I enjoy, like, the 45 seconds of romance that you get in the game.
Yeah, sure.
People really fixate on the romance stuff, and it's not really my bag, and it doesn't really bother me, you know, if a certain character only romances certain genders or what have you. But I understand it's some people that really, really love it. So, but yeah, but so that's
the characters,
I mean,
are you know, like, if the characters are supposed to represent actual people, it is completely understandable that somebody is like, hey, look, I'm just not interested. Like, I have things going on in my life. I'm not looking for a new, you know, relationship or something at this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Know? Absolutely.
And that goes into that character's makeup. So try as you might, like, maybe this person just doesn't like you. Like, sorry.
Right. So, I mean, we'll have tons of more BioWare Dragon Age stuff coming out of PAX, and who knows, maybe they'll actually let us play it there. We don't know yet. So we'll see. Maybe we'll actually get to touch it. Got to touch it. So what's going on with this Sony Home stuff in Japan?
Guys, it's so bad. Such bad news. Sony's shutting down Sony Home in Japan.
Has PlayStation Home ever come out of beta yet? Is it still in beta?
I don't know. They haven't announced anything for the West at this point, but Japan just came out and said, I think as of March, they will be shutting down PlayStation Home in their in the Japanese network, which is the weird 3D sort of rapey vibe thing that you have in Sony that I've never understood. It's weird to me. I say rapey because the only time that I signed into it, I watched like 10 different guys fall around women and like hit on them
in
a virtual network while they're just like trying to go buy their virtual dressing table and put it in their virtual home or whatever. I don't understand it, but anyways, apparently no one's signing into it and they've just decided this is a waste of their money and time, which is probably true.
Is PlayStation Home on PS4, Ash? Do you know?
There is not to my knowledge. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
So I don't even think it's on there.
How about that?
It was weird. I only went on a couple times, like right when I got my PS3, and I'm like, this could be really cool. And I remember watching, like, walking around some weird-ass mall, and then, like, just watching video feeds of game trailers, and then all these people, like, grinding on me. I was like, I don't understand. Like, this is, my worst nightmare.
It's like, why do you have to walk a virtual avatar over to a video screen to then watch a game trailer in, like, really poor quality?
Right.
When you can just, like, click a tile on a home screen on a normal UI and just watch the trailer.
Well, I think, I mean, their thinking obviously was that, you know, Second Life is huge and that there are these virtual universes or worlds that are, I guess universes, that are kind of like taken up in large numbers and people like them because it gives them like a personal avatar they can walk around and meet people with. It just was, I think, weird to jam it into a video game system that otherwise didn't need it to do all the things that you would do in it. You know, like, it's like, you can watch trailers and buy things. And you're like, well, I can watch trailers and buy things anywhere.
And, the problem with it is that it tried to do too many things and was not good at any of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, moving your character around was, like, janky. There were some games that they built into it, and those were pretty bobo. And then...
Bobo?
Bobo.
Wait, what?
Bobo?
The bobo.
Whoa, what is that?
Wow.
And, okay.
You really want to move past this, don't you?
I gotta Google this. Hold on. Googling it.
I agree. It was like a weird, like, I feel like it could have had games in it that were fun, but it definitely did not have games in it that were fun, and it was very awkward. But to me, it just felt like they were trying to have their own Second Life, even though Second Life was already a thing and big.
I think Bobo means cheap and generic.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Guys. Let's just move on from Bobo.
Could you say Bobalicious, meaning that it is extremely cheap and generic?
I suppose.
That car is totally Bobalicious.
Okay, I think we've derailed this enough.
Just let me know when you're done.
We're good. We're fine. Sony, PlayStation Home is terrible. I'm glad they're shutting it down somewhere.
Yes. I expect probably announcement about the West soon, unless for some reason America's using it in droves and we're just unaware of that. What if it's like a whole, like, it's fine.
People do like catfish videos in home all the time. Yeah.
That's kind of where
it's impossible to make an avatar that doesn't look like a D-bag in home, like for a male avatar.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but awesome. I was really bummed out. I wanted to make, like, you know, like I do on Xbox where I make like the creepiest looking thing ever created, and I felt like it was too real in Sony until you like leveled up your home character or whatever. Yeah.
Too much Polar Express there,
which was weird that you had to like level up. It was weird. I didn't understand it.
Yeah, makes no sense.
Anyways, this is a short bit of news that got announced like earlier this week, and I kind of sent it to you guys. I just think it's neat, but Vimeo has an on-demand service where you can rent and watch movies, and they just announced that they partnered with Austin's Alamo Drafthouse Films to add their like curated selection to Vimeo on demand. Vimeo, it's like a rent or buy, like $4 to rent or something like that. And then the movies are all pretty unique. So like if you're a fan of things like the Criterion Collection or what's another good example? I don't know. Just they're kind of like curated odd films. Vimeo put theirs up. They're really kind of interesting looking. There's one called The Visitor, which is like an old 70s sci-fi movie that I'm kind of down to see, and there's a few others that look really interesting that came out more recently that were like big hits at Sundance and things like that. But I thought it was interesting. If you head over to Vimeo and just search for Drafthouse Films, it'll come up, and Ash asked this and so I looked it up, but Vimeo's service is available like on Fire TV, Apple TV, Xbox 360, I think Sony PlayStation, Chromecast, you know, all of the devices, so you can watch some high quality movies on your TV with Vimeo. But I thought it was neat.
It is neat. Totally agreed. So what's up with the Simpsons fumble? I've been seeing lots of stuff about this every episode ever. How long will that fucking take, by the way?
12 days? Is that what they said?
Wow, that's crazy.
A lot of days, because there are a lot of Simpsons episodes. But
how many seasons are there? 20? Something like that?
24. 5. Oh my God. 4. Something like that.
That's amazing.
FXX, which is FX's more confusing channel, is doing this thing that they were hyping really big at Comic-Con called Every Simpsons Ever, where they are playing every episode of The Simpsons in sequential order over a period of, I think it's 12 days. It's however long 24 times 24 times 30 minutes ends up being or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awesome. We put it on the past couple of days. I've just been watching. I'm a huge, huge, huge Simpsons fan, and I've been watching a bunch of it. And I'll do the good news first, is that according to Nielsen, and this comes, I think I got it from UpRocks, Nielsen said that the opening day of the Every Simpsons Ever was the biggest day in FXX's history. Wow. They had like 1 million viewers overall, and some like really high rating, and or 1 million viewers in like the key demos or whatever TV words you want to use.
Yeah.
But supposedly just huge numbers for FXX for playing basically old content, which is kind of amazing. The fumble that I noticed, that I had to Google to make sure I wasn't crazy, and a lot of people have been posting something about this, is that for some reason FXX made the decision to air these in 16:9.
Oh, so that means they're cropping.
4:3, and they're zooming and cropping in on The Simpsons, which is really weird. I guess if you weren't a huge fan, or if you didn't watch a lot of The Simpsons, you might not notice, although I think you would still notice.
But who else is gonna, who odd. Other than gigantic Simpsons fans is really gonna be watching all of these episodes?
And I get it, no one has a 4:3 anything anymore. Like phones, tablets, TVs, they're all 16:9 at this point in time. Like the numbers have got to be astonishingly low for 4:3 viewers. Mm-hmm. But it was really off-putting. Like I kept going, like something looks really wrong, and like the everything looks like it's just line drawing cartoons, right? I mean, it's not like these are like super high def, but when you zoom in on them, like the lines start like jittering a little because of the animation.
Yeah,
and you're in high def now, so you notice that stuff, and then they're cropped, so you keep seeing things that I'm like, I don't remember them being like shot that way. Like that looks really weird, and I was noticing that, so.
It's like you're watching a VHS tape at that point.
Yeah.
Recorded for a TV.
It was really, really weird. But, you know, still fun. I'm glad they're getting really good ratings. I'm glad The Simpsons. I mean, like, the early Simpsons, the first 14 years of The Simpsons, are just, like, classic. Like, the stuff that came out of that era is just amazing and really funny. And the writing staff that was on those shows, including people like Conan O'Brien, were, I mean, just geniuses in comedic writing. So, so some of that stuff is really awesome. But I think it might still be airing when this podcast comes out. Yeah. So
did they air any of the, like the Tracy Ullman Simpsons, like the original,
ones?
I imagine they didn't, because I think they were just doing season 1 through 24, but they could have. I didn't have it on at the very opening thing, so I don't know. There weren't a ton of those. It would have only taken like a couple of hours probably.
Could air them as commercials or something in between.
Yeah, essentially. So, but it's cool, you know, if you were unaware somehow, FXX, if you have that channel. It was really funny when FXX got launched. They pushed all of their like edgier comedy, so like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and I think Louie, and maybe something else, Wilfred maybe, got moved to FXX. And I watched the It's Always Sunny people doing like promotions for the new season, and every single one of them made fun of the channel. They were like, "We're on FXX because apparently we weren't good enough for 1X. We needed 2 or something. I don't know what's happening." They're all cracking jokes about the channel.
FXX is so horrible.
And that they were somehow further down on the cable dial now, and all this other stuff. So anyways, so that's The Simpsons. Check it out. I think it'll probably in the next couple of days actually switch to when they went 16 by 9. So, you know, at that point it'll probably look a lot better and more normal. It's just really weird that right now it's all zoomed and cropped and kind of off. And then the last piece of news that just popped up is Microsoft's making a new DeLorean.
Oh, yeah?
Not really.
No.
Oh, man.
It's a code name for some new cloud gaming movement prediction system they have that basically is making a ton of decisions about what you might do in a game and then preloading those moves into the cache. So, like, you're playing Doom and it's going to guess that you're going to turn left and shoot, like, before you do it. But what it's really doing is, like, making five guesses, pushing all five of those scenarios there, and then it's ready when you go to do it.
Crazy. Interesting.
And they said that through their testing, they've noticed up to 250 milliseconds of lag was unaffected while playing, which is a pretty huge, that's a pretty big lag.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it was unnoticeable in single player. Now, the things they've admitted is that it takes an incredible amount of bandwidth to push all this stuff through the wires, you know,
yeah.
Like to have you have 10 moves waiting for you is a lot of things to get ready. And they talked about how multiplayer would be more difficult because you'd have up to 16 people needing predictions over the wire ahead of time. But they also said that there's this kind of tech already exists to an extent in multiplayer where they're already making guesses as to what you might be doing, which I was completely unaware of, but makes sense.
Like in terms of loading things, like stuff like that?
Yeah, loading things before you do them, essentially. But this is down to the movements and the things that you would do, which I thought was pretty pretty interesting. I know you guys probably didn't get a chance to read this at all, right?
No, I didn't. I saw some announcements about DeLorean, but I didn't really dig into it. So
yeah, I mean, so they tested it with Doom 3 and Fable 3. They dealt with pretty big lags, and it was completely unnoticeable because of this system guessing what they were going to do and pushing things to them before they did it.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
I feel like this might have some kind of implications for streaming games if they ever decided to go to, you know, something similar to PlayStation Now, where they stream certain content to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's entirely what they're doing. You know, like getting. I think the thing that's interesting to me with a company like Microsoft is that as old and lumbering of a giant as they are, and as slow as they are to market with so many things, we forget that they have one of the biggest R&D departments like in the world, and they do
all
things
over the world too.
Yeah, and they're constantly creating these like innovative tech things that are just mind blowing. Like, did you see the GoPro thing where they stabilized GoPro video?
No,
no,
it's another crazy thing that you'd have to look at. It was insane, but anyways. I just thought this was really interesting, cool tech. I know we kind of all poo-poo cloud gaming a little bit because the bandwidth isn't there yet and the tech isn't 100% there yet. But it is neat that they're still pushing stuff like that. You know, in the same way that, you know, we crap on, or I personally crap on VR sometimes.
Mm.
It's less that I don't think the tech is worth it or that it's going to be terrible. It's just that, to me, we're lauding things before it's out, and you know, I still appreciate the fact that people are doing it, that there's research going into these like brand new developments in these like crazy areas. So
for sure.
That was cool. Figured I'd bring it up. We have some quick Shield announcements, Ash.
Yeah. So a couple big things came out this week. The first is they've actually cast Mockingbird, who is one of the members of the West Coast Avengers. So she will pop up on Shield, and it's going to be played by Adrian Padalecki, who's been on tons of stuff. She was in the second G.I. Joe movie. She was in Friday Night Lights. She was actually Wonder Woman in the Wonder Woman pilot that did not get picked up a couple years ago. So she's going to be playing Avenger Mockingbird in S.H.I.E.L.D., which I think is pretty fucking cool that they're bringing in Avenger members that have not been in the films yet. And also announced they're going to be facing off, the S.H.I.E.L.D. members are going to be facing off against a incredibly super difficult enemy to fight, who's the Absorbing Man.
Yeah.
So Absorbing Man, who normally fights people like Thor and the Hulk, is actually going to be facing off against the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I guess, in this season 2 premiere from what I've been reading. So
neat.
Yeah. And then the lore behind Absorbing Man is pretty cool. He actually gets his powers from Loki, and
His powers are pretty basic. He can touch any substance, like, you know, rock or metal, and then he actually turns into that substance, and he has superhuman strength, and he carries around like a huge wrecking ball. he's fucking awesome. I love Absorbing Man. So I'm interested to see what they're going to do with a character that powerful on S.H.I.E.L.D. or something. So,
do you think they're kind of taking notes from Arrow and saying, oh, we should start introducing our B and C level characters
yeah,
in this television show?
Absolutely, because I think the fear was with these superhero television shows is it's not going to resonate with like a wide audience. If you have people right. in costumes and people with weird powers, then it's not going to get the, you know, the 5-6 million views you want it to get, if not more, right? But I think Arrow is kind of proving that you can have all these exotic characters with cool abilities and crazy costumes, and people are just, we're finally at the age where we can, you know, where we're like, okay, that's acceptable.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly.
So I'm excited, you know, and there's more stuff too. They're adding cast members all the time. They added Kyle MacLachlan as Skye's dad. We don't know anything about him yet.
Really? So, I didn't yeah. see that. They did.
Yeah, so Agent Cooper.
Isn't he from, yeah, I was going to say he's from...
from the old Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks.
He'll be in it too. And there's a couple other casting announcements I don't remember off the top of my head, but we'll have more of those later. So, Scott, are you ready to talk a little bit about what's going on at PAX?
Yes, sir. It's going to be a
Wait, hold
one.
On, guys. Let me curl up in the corner and go cry a little bit while you guys do all this.
Womp womp. You'll be there in spirit. I missed last year's PAX Prime.
I know.
So I'm you're tagging me in.
I just forego getting paid and just eat ramen noodles.
In Pop-Tarts.
In Pop-Tarts, yeah. So obviously Scott and myself will be there, and I think a number of you guys will be there. Matt unfortunately has to sit this one out, but we've been kind of setting up our schedule and figuring stuff out about the big show. And we had originally said, and we were joking around, that we were going to kind of try and take it a little bit easier this year, but that didn't exactly work out, did it, Scott?
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, it certainly looks that way. And we were kind of talking ahead of time, and it's like, I think this was one of our tips as well, which is that it's okay to have a schedule, but you should be ready for the schedule to fall apart and for other things to happen. So yeah. That's kind of where we're set up at this point. We have appointments, you know, both AAA and indie, like mega booth style. We do have some panels that we plan to go to and some, you know, like nighttime functions, including our own nap on Thursday night.
Yeah.
So what are you, Ash, what are you kind of excited for? Go ahead and highlight maybe some things on your schedule, on your, you know, the things that you book that you're stoked for.
Cool. So obviously I'm very excited about the nap. We still don't know exactly. It's kind of like mysterious. I don't know exactly how many people are coming or really what's going on yet. It's kind of up in the air, but we'll be there, and hopefully a lot of you guys will be there too. Things I'm really excited about. I want to say there is Volition, who did Saints Row, has a unannounced title that they're showing off, and we get to see it on Friday, and I guess we get to play it on Friday. So the game is not announced yet. I'm a huge fan of the Saints Row franchise, so anything that Volition does, I'm a huge fan of. And so that on Friday we get to play.
Do you have any
that.
Ridiculous predictions?
I would love to see, I mean, a next gen Saints Row. That's really, I mean, that would make me incredibly happy.
I mean, because they're kind of like their two big titles are Saints Row and Red Faction, right?
Yes. Yes.
So oh, and apparently Descent. If it was like Descent for the Xbox One, I would lose my mind.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
Did you ever play Descent back in the day?
I did. It was flying around like a crazy man. Like,
oh my god, that
shooter.
Is the most
yeah.
disorienting. One of the most disorienting games that I think that you can play, like from that era.
Yeah, I remember really liking it though. And what else? Oh, Darkest Dungeon, which was my indie of show at East, is going to be there with all new levels, all new characters. And media gets to take a look at the town mechanics. So, you know, there's actually a mechanic where you can go to town and shop and talk to NPCs and stuff. And so that's only going to be available for the media. So we have an appointment to check that out, too.
Great.
So I'm really excited to see Darkest Dungeon. And those guys are really, really cool.
Cool.
What else? Oh, on Friday night, the new BioWare Austin game, Shadow Realms, is having a fan event, and it's actually in our hotel, so I'm excited about that. Perhaps
yeah.
dropping by, because I can just like walk downstairs and go to it, which yeah. is great. And what about you? Anything?
Okay, so for me, you know, I'm into the science-y stuff, so I'm pleased to see that this year there's going to be a games user research panel from people that work in industry and academia as well. And then following right after that, there's going to be a panel about QA, which is sort of the other arm of testing and refining games and investigating games. So those two are back to back. I don't know that I can make it to both, but I hope to make it at least to the games user research panel. I found an interesting panel in the schedule about combat. And the reason why I thought that that panel was particularly interesting was that it had three retired military personnel on the panel.
Oh, and really?
So, like, you know, Ash, you always like to talk about a lot about, like, the way guns feel, like, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I think they're going to speak to that. I think they're also going to speak a little bit about the psychology of violence, exposure to violent behavior in games. So it seems like there's some kind of educational value from, I guess, like what you would call a subject matter expert, like someone that's actually fired a real gun in a, you know, combat situation versus like doing the same thing in a video game and how that's similar and not similar and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also on Sunday a couple of panels for Gearbox and Bungie. I think that those are both timely because Gearbox has a new Borderlands game coming out, and then Destiny is right around the corner, so that could be interesting to see if they have any last minute announcements before they drop those games. And then for me, some of the things that I ended up booking were things that I thought were interesting. So we've said before that something that we really like to do is kind of go on a journey of discovery in PAX and kind of and find out about things that were sort of not on our radar or maybe not on anybody's radar and are sort of being exposed in the wild for the first time at a convention event. So
yeah, absolutely.
It should be exciting to see, you know, especially the games that are in the mega booth, I think are a good source for stuff like that. So there are some pretty interesting ones there this year. Robot Loves Kitty, which you checked out their game last year. It was Legend of Dungeon, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're working on some, they call this game Upsilon Circuit, and it's supposed to be like a dungeon crawler.
Crazy.
That has a streaming mechanic where the audience somehow decides what happens in the game as you play.
Yeah, so they kind of play as puppet masters and
control,
which is great because streaming has become such a popular thing, and it's something that, you know, we being like old salty dogs don't really do a lot of.
Yeah,
but people love the streaming thing, and the fact that they're one of the first to really incorporate that mechanic or streaming into actual game mechanic is pretty amazing. And I think, I mean, I'm not saying this is where they got their idea, but have you ever seen like Twitch Plays Pokemon or anything like that from a couple months back?
Yeah, I remember that.
So I think that might have something to do with the logic behind behind this game, Upsilon Circuit.
It's a great idea. And then, you know, so for me, it's like I want to find the next big thing. Like, what's going to be the big indie hit that people are going to be leaving PAX and going like, oh man, Broforce, you got to fucking play that game because it's amazing. Because that was like one of those things that exploded over the course of the last few months.
Absolutely.
You know, into Expendabros, into like a licensed movie property even. So.
Absolutely. And it was well deserved too, because that game is still tons of fun. I still play it.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of my approach for PAX. And I think I think if we can do that, go in with an open mind, you know, eat food and drink coffee and hang out with friends, we'll be A-okay.
And we may have some folks helping us, because it's just you and I. So we may have some people that tell us what they think, and maybe we'll talk to them at PAX too.
We'll see.
We'll play it by ear, but we'll
see. Sounds good.
You know how Mylan came in last year and said like what she did? Well, we may have some extra people dropping by.
Secret guests.
In theory. I don't even know who they are yet.
Yeah. I was going to say secret to even Scott
and I. And to me too. So it's all right. Cool. So other than that, I mean, there's, you know, some big stuff. It goes all the way through Monday now. So Scott, I think, is taking off on Sunday. I'll be for about half a Monday. Then I'm taking off. So that's that. And, you know, always excited to get out to PAX, and we'll see how much stuff we can actually share with you guys.
Actually get to? Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's going to be exciting.
Oh, and in my less exciting, but just a quick hit in case anybody's going to be there. I don't know if you're definitely going, Ash, but I got accepted into the Boston Indie Games.
Oh, the Festival of Indie Games? Cool.
So we will at least have one person from Nerd Appropriate at the Boston Festival of Indie Games.
When is that?
Conference. It's the 2 weeks after PAX on Saturday.
Excellent.
Should be fun, and we might even talk to those guys that put on that conference. So
fantastic.
Be cool. Stuff. Good times.
Well, so you guys want to take a quick break and come back and talk about the Inuit Piercing Pagoda Simulator?
Sure. Let's do that.
So, Snowpiercer.
Let's jump right into it.
Snowpiercer. So this is a movie that kind of snuck up, and all of a sudden, I think about maybe a month and a half ago, I started checking Twitter, and I was like, watch Snowpiercer. And I looked and see if it was playing in theaters, and it was playing like in one theater in North Florida and nowhere else. And I was like, shit. And then I checked if it was on VOD, and it turns out it came out on VOD at exactly the same time it went into theaters, which I guess is a new model that I don't mind at all.
I
love it too, because I love going to the theater and watching movies. But some movies like this, it's like I don't mind, you know, paying the $8 and sitting there in my living room at night and watching it. So,
I wanted to start this off by just saying who the cast of this movie is, because I feel like it's insane.
It is pretty insane.
So the lead is Chris Evans, Captain America himself.
Yes.
One of the villains is Ed Harris. John Hurt is in it, Tilda Swinton, Jamie Bell, Octavia Spencer, Allison Pill. I mean,
like, it's a great cast.
Oh my God. Like, over and over again, I'm like, how did they sign this cast? Like, it's just crazy. Cause the director is this is a first time making an American movie, I believe.
He's a Korean,
South
correct?
Korean. Yeah. Jun Ho Bong. And,
I think his movie Host was the big one that he did.
Yeah, he did The Host. So, but The Host wasn't originally English, was it?
No, it was Korean, but it kind of blew up. It was really popular.
So this is his first time doing an English-speaking movie. Kind of amazing that sort of a, you know, unproven American director, or director in America, rather, gets this like star-studded cast. I mean, ridiculously star-studded cast, and then not only that, but gets a huge property, because Snowpiercer was a book, that was like blowing up in the sort of sci-fi post-apocalyptic era books, and has been for a while, and so a big name property, huge cast. That's what I wanted to open this up with, because I know some people may not know what Snowpiercer is or who is in it or any of that, and I think that part of it was crazy impressive to me. So,
well, I can probably give the general premise of the movie without spoiling anything, because I don't want to give away too many spoilers, because there are twists and stuff in this movie. But the general premise is that man figures out that there's this global warming problem, and he comes up with this like magical serum that he injects into the atmosphere, and it fucks everything up and makes everything worse, and basically the world goes into another ice age very, very quickly. And most of the population of the entire planet dies. There's like permafrost on everything. And there was one like billionaire industrialist who decided that he wanted to create a train that went all the way around the world. And he basically uses, you know, a huge portion of his wealth to create this super train that's, you know, absolutely massive. And it actually circles the entire planet. And it's like a luxury, cruise liner, but for trains. So it's kind of like the Concorde of trains, but even with a little bit more style and pizzazz.
And then it circles the planet once per year.
Yeah. So it actually goes, 365 days, it goes all the way around the planet. So every time, you know, it goes by the same places every year, which is actually important to the plot of of Snowpiercer. So what ends up happening is that society decides that, well, the train is actually safe haven from the elements. And so if you live on the train, you survive the cold. And society basically flocks to this train, sort of like the Ark. And the rich people are in the front of the train and the poor people are in the back of the train. And that's the way it's always been for years and years and years and years. And so society has just kind of adapted to this way of life, with the poor in the back and the rich in the front. And Snowpiercer is kind of about upsetting that status quo. And Chris Evans kind of leads this ragtag bunch of, I guess, freedom fighters to try and, you know,
mess take the front of the train.
Quo. Yeah, take the front of the train. So it's all about like getting from the back of the train to the front of the train.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's fucking crazy. And it's more, I know you're going to see this parallel too, when you start getting closer to the front, it becomes BioShock.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It gets very BioShocky. It gets really fucking weird. Like when Allison Pill gets introduced, you're like,
yeah,
what is happening? It gets super fucking weird. Really surreal. Like,
or I mean, you could compare some of it to, you know, District 1 and Hunger Games, where there's just like excess and lavishness all over in the front of the train. Yeah. And as you move through the train, it gets more and more that way until you get to the very front. So
yeah. Like each car is like, each car has its own like personality, almost like a level from a like a game or something. Like and one's heard, like the sauna room, one's the sleeping room. It's weird. Yeah.
I've heard they cut some of the cars, quote unquote, from the train too, from the book, obviously, for time reasons.
Oh really?
That the book goes in depth on more of the train and what's going on inside of it. Mm-hmm. I will say, without having read the book, that this did feel like a good adaptation movie, because I understood what was going on. I understood who was in the movie. I understood like how they were moving and why they were moving from one part to the other. Like, I think a lot of adaptations get stuck in that, you know, either jamming too much in or not putting enough, and then you don't know what the hell is going on at any point in time. So I thought they did a really good job of that. Without having read it, you know, I'm sure everybody who read the book who sees the movie will be like, the book was better, because that's just how it always is. But the I did think, having not seen it, that it was quite a good adaptation. Yeah, I think that was a really good description.
You can talk about what you didn't like, because there were some things, like, I think the pacing was really weird.
The pacing...
Like it like ramps up and then just kind of like dissolves a little bit.
Yeah. So there's a lot of kind of moving action. So one thing I did notice is that it didn't feel as claustrophobic as I expected it to. So like, because the whole thing takes place on a train. Train cars are not very wide. You know, this is a pretty traditional sized train, it looks like. So it's kind of like there were moments, there were times, there were certain you know, hard to talk about without spoilers, but there are certain time, certain fight scenes, because there are many fight scenes, and they're all actually shot gorgeously.
Yeah,
to me, really I thought good. The fight scenes were really great. And you also see Chris Evans do like Captain America kicks and stuff, which is kind of cool. there were fight scenes that felt claustrophobic, but otherwise, except for in the very tail car, and maybe that was the point, it didn't really feel like they were on a train sometimes. Sometimes it felt, I don't know, it was weird. But yeah, the pacing was definitely very up and down. In the beginning of the movie, it takes about 30 minutes before anything really happens in the movie. The first 15 minutes is like absolutely nothing happening. Yeah, you're just watching
really
people
slow.
Eat.
It's really slow. Like,
they're eating these weird protein bars, and you're just watching them eat protein bars and talk about a
I
thing
love,
that they
I love
say.
The twist about the protein
bars,
though.
Yeah. but yeah, they the first 15 minutes is literally just them just going like, should we do it? No, don't do it. Should we do it? No, don't do it. And you're like, what are we doing? Somebody announce the plot, please. And they eventually do. They get to it, how they're going to try and take the front of the train, and Chris Evans talk like monologues about what he's been planning and all this stuff. And they introduce John Hurt, who is like kind of the emotional leader of the group, if you will. He's you know, very old, and he's lost a couple limbs, and he's kind of like help guiding Chris Evans' character through what he should be doing. And I really will say that I enjoyed the movie quite a bit more than I thought I would. I had heard really mixed reviews. I had some friends that literally hated the movie and said it looked terrible and they didn't like it and that it just felt off. And I think a couple of them had read the book and they felt like it didn't match up to the book well enough and all this other stuff. And then I had some friends that were like, man, it was like just like a good, you know, action kind of post-apocalyptic movie. And I can see it in that kind of way, sort of like The Raid, if you will. Like it had great fight scenes, really great action pieces in it, which I think is where like a lot of South Korean directors excel, it seems like, because they put out these really awesome, like ultra-violent movies. And then it also had really great acting. Like,
it really did. Tilda Swinton, especially, was really incredible in this.
The only thing... I loved her in this, and she was brilliant. The only thing that was hard with the movie was that at times you couldn't tell if it was being comedic or being flamboyant, if you will.
Yeah, the tone was weird. No, you're absolutely right. You couldn't really... The acting was... The problem was, I think every actor was doing something a little bit different. Like, Chris Evans was taking the role very, very seriously. Like, he's very gruff. Like, his character is almost kind of like Wolverine, you know? And then there's other characters that are like, you know, fucking Willy Wonka. So, like, what happens when you put Willy Wonka in a room with Wolverine? It just doesn't work very well, you know?
Yeah, but I will say that Chris Evans, Tilda Swinton, Octavia Spencer, who's from The Help, and even Jamie Bell, who Melissa pointed out was...
the dancing movie, right?
It was Billy Elliot.
There we go. That's the dancing movie.
Yeah, so, like, everybody there, and John Hurt and Ed Harris, for that matter, were all, like, great actors. Like, wonderfully played scenes, done it just perfectly. Really great. Even actually the two Korean actors they had, Kang Ho Song and Ah Sung Ko, who show up kind of in the middle of the movie. The girl who played the 17-year-old girl that is there is like, she was awesome. I loved her all the way through. Like her like weird like clairvoyancy when she would just be sitting there and then she would just say something and you're like, what? And then it would happen like right after that and you're like, oh shit. Like I thought that
there
was
There is a cool scene that, like, I realized, like, it's about three quarters of the way through, and the team that's with them is almost like a band of superheroes. They have like a dude with one arm, a clairvoyant, like it was really. They had like a knife fighter, like this crazy ninja guy with like covered with tattoos. You're like, this is really cool, very stylized, cool characters. Good movie. So I mean, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I really did enjoy it. Ultimately, I feel like I really did enjoy it. I walked away thinking, like, that was a really great movie. I really had a good time watching it. Like you said, there were some rough parts, but nothing that really broke it for me. So I don't know what your thoughts are.
I'm pretty much in the same camp. This is not a movie that's going to appeal to everyone. It's like it's a hardcore sci-fi film. Meaning that it's not, you know, it's not going to be appealing to a super wide audience. But if you like really thinking about, you know, what life would be like if there was only one train full of people on the whole planet and, you know, kind of putting yourself in the shoes of these characters, it's pretty cool. And I definitely think a lot of our listeners would like it. So definitely look for Snowpiercer on VOD right now. I think it's all over the place, so.
Yeah, sci-fi less in the vein of the new hip YA or even in the lasers and space kind of sci-fi, but more in the alternate future, what happens if science really screwed us kind of thing.
Yeah, it's definitely more like Kubrick, Blade Runner, like old, like, you know, late 70s, early 80s sci-fi.
Yeah, and I think unfortunately because of its sort of weirdness and its tone, it's going to get overlooked a little bit, but it's too bad because I do think it is a good movie. With the same message as Birdemic, if you think about it.
That's true.
Wow.
Don't fuck with birds.
Well, that just seals the deal right there.
There were like weird parallels I was drawing throughout this entire movie. I kept saying, and I don't want to say any of them because they would all ruin the movie, but I kept saying like, wow, that's just like blah, blah, blah. And it's like a really weird parallel to draw, but makes total sense when you see it in the movie. And, But most of them were pulled off really well. It's just the tone was odd, up and down. But the movie I thought was definitely worth a rent, like easily worth a rent.
For sure.
And watching at home. And if you are, it was actually playing here. It was at IFC and in a few other places in New York. So I didn't get to go see it in the theater, but I'm glad I watched it.
Cool. Well, let's take a quick break and come back with the nerd appropriate question of the week.
All right.
This is Alex Wilson-Regan, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com. Don't forget your toothbrush.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Guess what? You have to guess.
We're going to do the Naquato.
Good guess.
Thanks.
This is a generic one because, once again, we didn't ask until like Saturday morning. So it's a generic nerd-appropriate question of the week, but we are asking you guys about our greatest con memory because this will come out on PAX Eve, and a lot of us will be at PAX.
I thought we wrote all of the questions down 4 years ago, and we put him in the biggest hat ever, and we've just been drawing questions out of the hat the whole time.
Do you remember a couple of years ago when we actually did start to like stockpile them, and then I don't know whatever happened to that stockpile?
Yeah, I don't know what happened to that stockpile. It's probably buried somewhere in our Google Docs.
Probably. Yeah. Random, old, abandoned, nerd-appropriate questions of the week. The question this week was about your greatest con memory, and the first one is actually from Cliffy Joel. And Cliffy Joel has a very sad answer, and it kind of upsets me. He says, I've never been to a convention, but I'm going to go to the Salt Lake Comic Con in 2 weeks. Super stoked. Cliffy Joel, please write us and let us know how you like Salt Lake Comic Con. Once you start going to these shows, the world is a better place.
I also feel like some of these smaller Comic Cons are starting to be more enticing to me than some of the larger Comic Cons, if you will.
Just because of the volume of people?
I've just heard really, really good things about like C2E2 and Emerald City Con, and like there's other Comic Cons that aren't the branded San Diego one that I've heard have been very good, that a lot of my friends who, you know, either worked at Marvel or are huge comic fans like absolutely love going to. So might be a plan to check out some of those smaller ones this year. But yeah, Cliffy, let us know. Or Joel, rather. Let us know. He's Cliffy Joel, but let us know how Salt Lake Comic Con goes.
Yes, please do.
Alexi Staffer at Axe Staffer says, popping my con cherry at LeakyCon London 2013 with Chazlet 20. The W Rock Ball H-Tap, the weapon we have is love. Did I read any of that correctly?
I think you did. I think there was some inside jokes in that one, or inside knowledge statements there.
Yeah, so there either that or we just like said nuclear launch codes, and there's going to be a city that's about
Scott
to explode. Good job, Scott.
Small island off the coast of
started World War III.
Whoops, my bad.
Nate Buckman at Nate B says, Dragon Con 2012, going to a press party, meeting John Reese Davies,
yes.
Him buying me a cocktail, and getting to chat with him. That's
nice.
Cool.
Whoa.
Those are always fun. Things like that. Justin Banks at Midtown 583 says, I'll always cherish shaking hands with Groovy Bruce at South Florida Convention. Groovy.
That's awesome.
That old Bruce Campbell.
Good old Bruce Campbell.
I remember I met Bruce Campbell, and he signed something for me a long time ago, and I told him my name was Ash, and he was like, really? He's like, I don't meet many of those. And then that was it. Like I was an alien or something.
Ted Aliza at Ted Aliza says, spending time with my real-life sisters as costume barbarians.
Nice.
Cool.
Cosplaying.
I kind of secretly want to cosplay one of these days.
We're just so busy at these cons, you would basically have to take the con off, you know?
Yeah, you would. Absolutely.
To do other things.
When do you guys say yours?
Oh.
Scott?
Let's see. I was not prepared. But I will, okay, off the top of my head, I will say that hanging out, doing our final recording at PAX East with Mylan and Sean in the concourse was a really great way to end that
in the hall event. That didn't at all smell like farts.
Yeah, and I feel like I saw something weird happen, too, when somebody was going down the escalator. I think I saw someone pick their nose and eat it.
Yes. Yeah, you did.
You did.
Yeah. So that, I mean, those are memories right there.
So you're
there,
going
folks.
With that over meeting Tim Rose?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's at a Star Wars celebration. I met him twice, actually, and he is the nicest guy. Both times, by the way, wearing the same shirt. It was 2 years apart, the times that I met him. I called him on it, too, and he laughed at me. And he was like, it's my vacation shirt. And I said, hey, I'm not making fun of you. I'm just saying, like, you've got a thing, and, you know. Good on you for that.
You've got a thing.
Yeah, you got a thing going here. So that's nice. That's mine. Yeah.
Ash, do you have yours?
I'll say a couple. I'm gonna. My first San Diego Comic Con, I went with. I want to say I just went with Seth, and we had no idea what the fuck we were doing at all. And it was, I think, the year 2000, and we actually didn't book a hotel.
Year 2000.
Yeah, no, it was a long time. We didn't book a hotel for like the last two nights we were there.
What? What were you thinking?
So we just like kind of stayed out, and then like went to like different movie screening rooms that were doing like all night screenings, and like slept in the fucking chairs. And this is shit you do when you're like, you know, 19. So it was absolutely agonizing, and but still it was like my first exposure to a really, really big, like, big con. And then my favorite memory was I want to say probably the first nap, just because it was weird actually meeting a lot of the our listeners and stuff for the first time. And I just remember, like, when Allie Hillis showed up, who was, you know, awesome enough to come to the first one, just seeing how excited everybody got to see her and how much fun she had and with everybody. And that was just such a cool, like, it was the first time I felt like, wow, like, we're not just doing a podcast. We're kind of making a weird little community of, you know, nice people. And that that's my favorite part of this whole thing. So those are probably my two favorites.
That's nice.
Cool. Yeah.
That party was, that was kind of magical too. You know, it was, in the sense where it was like,
I get it. It's because I wasn't there. Cool.
It
guys.
Was because Matt wasn't there, you know, and I remember saying to Ash, I was like, thank God, you know, like, it's just the two of us finally.
So much better when he's not around.
Yeah.
I was hoping you'd put a ring on it, but you didn't.
Whatever. Chris Jenkins at Cloglip says, Stan Sakai drawing me a full body sketch of Usagi Yojimbo at San Diego Comic Con in 91.
Wow.
91.
He has me beat. 91. Yes. San Diego Comic Con. Very nice. Matt, how about yours? Have you said yours yet?
Oh, no. Let's see. I probably have to do like Ash and go with I have to do Ash, but I have to say a few if I could. Yeah. One of my favorite convention memories, which is not super nerdy, is I went to South by Southwest in 2007 or six,
maybe.
I don't remember the year. And good friends of ours in this band called Nakatomi Plaza were there, and I was there for the tech part of it. But I stayed for the music part. And while I saw a bunch of amazing bands just by like wandering into clubs, like I saw the Sword cover Faith No More, like a full album of Faith No More, which was incredible.
Who's getting back together, by the way? Did you hear that?
Yeah, I saw that.
It's amazing.
I'm okay with that. I got to just tour around with Nakatomi at South by Southwest, and they had this crazy show schedule where they were playing like 5 shows in 2 days, and they were just like jumping from club to club, and like I was just running around with them, helping them with equipment and stuff, and it was just a really fun, like one of those punk rock fun times, helping these guys just trying to do anything at this humongous music convention.
You should go look them up, by the way, if you're listening and you like
that punk rock.
Yeah, punk rock music.
Melodic punk rock, if you will.
Yeah, they're incredible.
Yeah, Nakatomi Plaza. They were great. And they were just like good friends of ours. And then Comic-Con, definitely probably my first one with Melissa in San Diego was – it was like, you know, popping my Comic-Con cherry, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I just remember it being completely overwhelming and absolutely a blast. And I remember at one point we had a day off because we didn't get 4-day passes. And we ended up just walking around San Diego, and it was like just kind of – we just were talking about the con and like things we loved, and it just was a really awesome moment. Mm-hmm. I just remember that being really great, and that con just being like me thinking like, well, I'm just going to come to this every year now. Like, okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No matter what happens, try and get out there, right?
Yeah. And then PAX – I would say last PAX Prime's Nerd Appropriate Party.
Because I wasn't there?
Because Scott was. No, there's something about Seattle's parties, man. They're just very chill and very fun, and everybody like just kind of rolls in. And I just remember thinking like at the Prime one, because the Boston ones are great because of the club and the guys we know, and they're super awesome and very fun. But the Seattle one, because it was like such an unknown, like I didn't know the city, I didn't know we were having the party, I didn't know who was going to be there. And then like a ton of people showed up, and I just remember looking at Ash and being like, so this is a thing. Like we've got like a really awesome community, and this is really a thing, and it's really fun. Like I like this, you know? Yeah, so definitely. And also Scott wasn't there, and it just, you know, no whining. It was
right,
so much
right
better.
Into the day. We have one from Ness, who's Paper by the Ton. She says, creepy Shepherd twinsies. With Katia 97 at East, and also the Nerd Appropriate Pre-PAX Party, Natch. Thank you, by the way.
I promise not to creep on Ness at the airport this time, like I did last time at East.
Did you?
Yeah, well, I was...
Did you sniff her hair?
No, I didn't. Well, she's taller than me, so I couldn't
you didn't leap in the air.
I couldn't get there, but I remember I was... Like, she was walking, and then I kind of was walking in the same direction as her, And I was so tired at that point, I was just kind of like, hey, what's up? And she like looked at me like, oh, who's talking to me? Like, what is going on? Because I was just kind of like on my way to get food and she was going somewhere else. And I was just like, all right, well, have a good flight. See you later. And I just like went and got Froyo or something. It was super weird. And I won't do that this time. I promise. Sam Nee says, nerd appropriate meeting you. And then lists a bunch of other people as well. Including Tina Stitzer, Beth Garrison, Allison 3388, Hokey 98, JJ, J Hill Tweets, Miss Allie Hillis, and DC Douglas at AFO 2013.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was AFO. We were there.
Yeah, we were there.
That was like, feels like so long
snuck
ago.
Snuck in one day and just kind of did that. Yeah. That was crazy, right?
That's right.
Did you see Jennifer Hale did the old ice bucket challenge and everything?
Yeah, we got to do that today, guys. Did you see we got challenged?
I did not. I did not see that.
Well, you know, I mean, technically, challenge. Ash, you run the Twitter, so
yeah. I mean, are you sure you guys manage that Twitter account? So.
And I mean, we don't. You said long ago you guys should stay off of the Twitter account. Just let me manage it.
That was never said.
I feel like you've earned your right to do this right. Now.
If I do it, then I'm just going to nominate you guys directly. Oh, and then if you don't do it, then you're going to feel terrible, like a terrible human being.
Okay. I can just donate money, right? Isn't that a thing that I can do?
You have that option as well.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
So we got a couple of mailbags, guys.
Mailbag!
After my talking about building a computer and some other things, we had two sort of responses. I wanted to kind of bring them in. I'm not going to read the whole emails because some of it's just personal about how to build a computer. But Robert Freemering, our buddy, Mr. Slick, wrote, and the things that he brought up that I thought were important were, he said, don't skimp on a power supply, which I never think about.
Yeah, me.
And get an SSD, which we've already been talking about how everybody says, get an SSD, you know.
More expensive, but speeds everything else up.
Yeah, but he basically said the power supply, like, no one thinks about, and then you get an underpowered power supply, and your graphics card can barely run, and it does nothing good for you.
It's a good investment, too. I think I've been moving the same power supply in and out of all of the desktop computers that I've had over the years.
Yeah.
So it doesn't go to waste, and, like, you know, there's some companies make ones that have, like, you know, enough connections, you know, because some of those bigger power boards will have require two power inputs to make them work. And then, you know, you can get like a modular power supply that has different, you can basically connect into the power supply the things that you actually need to power. So you're not left over with a bunch of extra cables at the end.
Right.
So there are definitely options there.
He also wrote in with an answer to the question. He said, I went to a little first year con called GenreCon with my son in 2012, where we met Mark Meer and Courtney Taylor. It was the first night of the con. So one was there, no one was there probably, no one was there, so we actually got to spend time with them, ask questions, etc. Mark actually left the signing table, went to his room, and returned with a DVD of a sketch comedy show he was a part of because I mentioned how much I enjoyed it in conversation. Sometimes meeting your heroes, they exceed what you expected.
Oh,
that's
what
awesome.
A nice guy. That's
yeah,
so cool. Nice.
I've heard Mark Meer, who we actually haven't had on the show ever, which is kind of crazy, but I heard he's just such a sweet dude. So
that's cool.
Maybe we'll have him on one day.
The last mailbag we got, three mailbags, guys, it's good, is Rasmus Van Nielsen, who's been a long-time listener and sends in emails quite a bit, and I wanted to include his thoughts.
Yes, thanks for sending emails, by the way. We do read every word, so thank you.
Yeah. He gave us a correction about Tomb Raider, saying that it did end up actually breaking even and making a little bit of money over time, and that now they're saying with these re-releases, it's probably going to end up being way into the black as opposed to not making money. And then he linked us to an article, which I read and was true. They basically said that the first month sales were only 3.4 million and they were expecting 5, and that was the problem. But that over time, they made their money back. And then he said, of course, this new deal will reduce the risk, and that you would have to assume. He also talked about VR real briefly, and he brought up a thing that I think I've talked about before, which is that these VR things are, you know, external pieces. They need a machine to run on still, and they're finding that they need relatively high-powered machines to make this stuff useful in any way.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a metric shit ton of human factors issues that probably most people don't consider that go into building and releasing to the general public a machine that you wear on your head that has tiny televisions in it.
I think that, like I said earlier, I think it's amazing that somebody's working on the tech. I think it's cool that people are excited about it. I just don't want to laud or shit on a thing that barely exists in any capacity right now. So it just frustrates me when other people do, you know, Kinect's dead, VR is forever. And you're like, come on, guys. Like, one's been out for 6 months. One, you know, hasn't even come out yet. Anyways, and then I thought this was interesting. He talked about digital and Steam for a minute. I'm just going to go ahead and read it. It's a little long. He said, I still don't know how to feel about buying digitally, although I do so on Steam, mainly due to the current pricing. The difference is that the games that are available digitally on Xbox are always on sale for full retail price. Buying disc-based from Amazon.UK would usually be cheaper. He's actually in, I don't know what country, but I know he's over in Europe.
Yeah, he's over there.
The irony at the moment is that you can very easily set an Xbox One in Denmark to the marketplace and get games for $60.
That's true, yeah, because, right, every, like, the games are typically more expensive in Europe. I don't even know that it's, like, I don't even think that the games would be, like, 60 euro, which is already more than what that would be U.S. I think they might be, like, 70 euro sometimes, and then you're talking about something closer to, like, a $100 game.
Yeah, Australia is like that. Like, games in Australia are, like, 90 bucks.
Yeah, man, that's rough. So I can definitely understand how you can look at something like Steam and they go, hey, you can buy, you know, I don't know, like the entire collection of XCOM games for $5. You think like, well, I'm not going to spend 40 to get this on a console. That's just insanity for sure.
Mm-hmm. So he continues and says, naturally, digital is a lot easier in almost all aspects. It doesn't really change the fact that MS messed things up in beginning with their PR. I do feel that there is some difference between wanting to be able to pre-order digitally and the idea of locking a disc to the system. I personally had a PS4 for a little while, but the aggressive fan and stupid light bar on the controller were negatives for me. Being annoyed with something as simple as a light bar might seem like me being picky, but the reflection in the TV sure was annoying.
Oh, I've never thought of that.
The fan might have been defect, but after the system was sold, it was later replaced, and the fan was still loud. That's a problem when you're used to an iMac that makes no noise, which is very true.
Yeah, I think a light bar is really annoying, too.
Now, see, like, that is just a minor problem, too. But imagine, again, with the VR headset, putting that in a home, like, there's so much testing involved, and, like, I can guarantee you that probably no one was probably ever in a situation where they held the controller close enough to the TV to see the reflection in it, like, before they released that product.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And those are the kinds of weird things that just kind of creep up, like, once you get a product in the wild. So there's just, like, you know, there's marketing on one side and then the reality on the other side where you're actually in your living room with the tech every day.
Right.
And, you know, I think for me and I think for you know, maybe the three of us, like, that's why we like something like the Kinect so much, because on the whole, it just kind of works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's out of the way. I think that the I just blanked on what they're called. Oculus Rift, right, is the big one, and then Sony's got one.
The Morpheus.
Morpheus. Like, I think that they're going to sit in beta for a real long time. I think that this Oculus Rift's going to build off hype in beta for a super long time. It's not going to come out as, like, a real item in Target and Best Buy for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I get it. They're going to sit there, and they've got tons of funding. They've got plenty of money to sit on and work out all the kinks.
Got those Facebook dollars.
Jeez, man. I mean, it's just insane how much money they have now. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. I think it's an interesting idea. But, you know, I thought the digital stuff was interesting. I always forget about it. So we have coworkers that are in Canada, and they talk about – and we have a lot of listeners that are in Canada. And they talk about, like, Netflix and how – like, digital Netflix is actually kind of terrible in Canada because they don't have all the licensing that America has.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So they've got a different selection of movies, and it's not actually that great. And it's like, you forget that we're sort of in the nexus of this idea of digital in America, where the companies are based here, the rights are usually figured out here first. You know, it's kind of weird to think that, oh, yeah, this works so great. And then you look at Europe and they're like, we have half the selection and it costs twice as much. And you're like, oh, sorry.
A lot of Canadians actually trick the system and get American Netflix.
Get like a credit card based in the U.S. or something like that. Or
no, actually, you VPN into a U.S. network.
Ah.
You can watch whatever you want.
You go. Not fooling anybody, Netflix. Mm-hmm. They'll figure you out.
Cool. Are we done, guys?
We're done.
I think so.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening to episode 167 of the Rated NA podcast. You can email us directly like the people did today, and that is Matt, Scott, and Ash at nerdappropriate.com. Please follow us on Twitter, and that's @nerdappropriate on Twitter, or go to our Facebook and that is /nerdappropriate on Facebook. We will have lots of pictures and stuff from PAX up on our Facebook page, so definitely check that out. And we hope to see you guys at PAX, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, if you're going to PAX, travel safe, come say hello, and have fun. See you next week.
Bye, guys. Have fun at PAX
without me. Oh, wow, wow.
Not allowed to come out of here until that podcast is finished.
Whoa. See that? She's scolding me.
Yeah.